It is time for This Week in the Lakeville Journal, when we're joined by Cynthia Hoswinder and Janet Manco. And we say good morning to both Cynthia and Janet. Good morning.
Good morning. Good morning.
You know, I had a laugh this morning. I didn't look at the paper last night because I went to bed early. But when I got up this morning and looked at the paper, and the first thing I see is, I'm laughing, but I'm not laughing because of the story. Salisbury Affordable Housing suit filed against town, the Salisbury Housing Commission for Housing Plan. I said to myself, well, gosh, who would have thought that was going to happen?
Everybody. Okay.
Yeah, yeah. It's
you're paying attention.
It's the times we live in.
Yeah. And I guess the object lesson there is that with all of these situations where the people kind of stand up and say, we're not really happy with that, that the democratic process is they come to the meetings, they express their opinions, and then there's a vote. But that doesn't mean that it's over when it's over. So that, for example, in Kent, a lot of conversation about the cell tower, the AT&T cell tower, that a lot of people are very opposed to, but a lot of people support. And the state siting council had approved it, but that's in litigation now also. And so the Salisbury Affordable Housing Plan for the historic district in Lakeville had been approved to go ahead after a great deal of discussion. A subgroup of people who oppose it had hired an attorney called Daniel Casagrande, who is referred to as the Giant Slayer. And so he's filed a suit on behalf of some of the people who oppose it, and his application says that the PNZ decision to go ahead with that is illegal, arbitrary, and or capricious, and constitutes an abuse of discretion. So that's a pretty broad impeachment. So we'll see how that goes, but certainly what it will do is it will slow down the process, and we will hope that other avenues of affordable housing are explored as they are being explored.
I'm not picking sides in this, but here's the sad thing about this is when people now in towns, when commissions and everything go ahead and do something like this, they have to find in the background a huge budget because besides the time, the cost of the lawsuit and the cost of the materials, which is going to go up in the time which has happened, which we found out, by the way, with the transfer station, can make something that was once affordable not affordable. So that's the sad part of it. I'm not picking sides in this at all. It's just that it seems like nowadays we've come to the matter that you're going to have to go to court to get something you want.
Right, and I'd say consistently with every infrastructure project that we ever have in the northwest corner, that if there's 2 or 3 years of dispute, that without question, the cost rises substantially because of the cost of building materials, which I would say I think that they're supposed to go down occasionally. They're a commodity, but I think that generally what we find is the cost gets higher and higher, and especially at this moment now with inflation and the demand after COVID-19. But, you know, that's just the way it goes.
Yeah, it's pretty amazing. Well, on the good news front, which is on the front page of the Lakeville Journal, the FFA students and programs and the awards all announced.
They're making good use of that tent out on the grassy oval in front of Snohomish Valley Regional High School, which was not only the site of the FFA awards, but will be the site of graduation tonight, and also will be the site of a memorial this weekend for Roland Chinati, coach, one of the most beloved Housatonic community members around here, the athletic director for many years, just the loveliest guy, passed away last year, and the family will hold a service. I think they're expecting a large crowd. Information is on the OBITS page, and if you loved the coach, as everybody did, please do turn out. The family would love to see you.
All right, and right below that, the legislative session ended. They went back into a special session, and it looks like the marijuana bill is going to squeak by.
Yeah, that's going to be a very interesting, not that it's not available so much in within an easy drive from our area, but certainly people from out of state that I know have been asking me, like, are you going to pass the marijuana bill? So it looks like that's going to happen. And Patrick, a good summary on what's been happening in the legislature so far in this session, which technically ended, I think, on the 16th, including a $46 billion budget. So every 2 years they do a budget. This is the budget year. Next year will be sort of emergency legislation, but this is the big session.
All right. Right below that story, the Council of Governments considers funding jobs to fight the ongoing opiate crisis.
And you're probably on this mailing list as well. There's a group out of Cornwall, I think it's led by Joanne Wojtuciak, who included every single selectman from the region, from all of COG, I think, on an email group where she's really trying to sort of say, we're not happy with what COG is doing. We don't like the kind of the regional bent of what they're doing. It is, of course, a regional organization, but, you know, with any organization, there are always things to be concerned about. So Joanne, quite a good watchdog, and has been sending out emails saying, you know, maybe the COG has too much of a regional reach and we should be going back to being more town-centered. Something like this, though, with the opioid crisis, which is different in all of our area towns. It's worse in certain towns. In towns like Torrington, which have a much larger population, of course, as it was the case with COVID, more concerns about it. But it certainly is not something that we don't have to be worried about in our little towns, where there's quite a bit, sadly, of heroin use and abuse and other opioid use. It's been a little quieter. We haven't seen it as much in our faces as we had in recent years. We're certainly not seeing we're not having clarity that there's a lot of obituaries that are based on this, but we trust our regional experts in saying it's bad and it's getting worse. The COG, again, a regional organization, is looking at ways to maybe hire somebody to kind of be a regional task force in addition to some of the volunteer groups that are ongoing.
All right, right across from that, a nice story and some nice pictures, Migratory Bird Initiative, and an honor for Joe Ellis.
Joe Ellis, who's like a big Wall Street guy, and just loves the country so much and loves birds so much and loves to take photos of birds and had started putting out a bird calendar every year that became very famous. So it was a big honor to be on the Joe Ellis bird calendar list. But is doing other things too and was honored. He's been honored by Massachusetts Audubon, Sharon Audubon, and Greenwich Audubon. And what he was recently honored for by Greenwich Audubon was his work on migratory bird studies, so that if you see birds up here, you can figure out, where do they go in the winter, and what are they doing when they're not here? And, of course, that's also work that's been done by Lori Doss at the Marvelwood School in Kent, very important work she's doing, where they do bird banding, and Audubon helps to fund trips by students to go down to Panama every winter and try to trace the path of those birds that summer up here and winter down there. So a great story by Lula Hawken honoring Joe Ellis.
And an interesting story on coyotes, Wiley, they are so smart, and the way they can entrap and get regular pets to think that they're just dogs and then surround them. It's a great story on coyotes because we just have a lot of them out here.
We have a lot of them, and especially for people like you who live up in the hills and the mountains. There's something so spooky about their cry, and they, no matter how far away they are, they always sound like they're right under your window. But a good article by Patrick from a talk by Paul Coburn from the state DEEP, and busting a few myths in there, things that I had always assumed were true, such as people always say that when they do that horrible, scary cry that they're celebrating a kill. That is apparently not true. But to learn about other things, do read Patrick's article.
It was one of the reasons I have cameras outside my house, not for security, but to see the wildlife and how they act at night when humans aren't around. It really is pretty amazing. And coyotes come through the yard quite a bit. The Highland Games are back at Lime Rock Park.
I love the Highland Games, one of my favorite activities of the year. And as we all know, there is no racing at Lime Rock on Sundays. And so they've tried to fill the calendar with things that are interesting to the community and that are open to everyone. One of those things is the Highland Games, and you may sort of feel like, well, it's just a bunch of, people of a particular ethnic background. I've been there and seen, young black women, young black men. There's just a really diverse crowd that shows up for the Highland Games to participate, and they do these wild things like throwing what essentially are telephone poles, throwing shot puts, and then the most beautiful thing, in my opinion, is the pipe and drum bands, which they're beautifully dressed in their kilts and their formal uniforms. Twirling their batons and playing beautifully on the pipes as they parade. So we have information on how you can get the schedule, but a really a worthwhile outing on June 27th.
And I love the story on Robert Parker. He has recorded for us over 340 hour-long shows, Swing That Music, because on top of being an amazing artist, he's a great drummer and an aficionado of jazz. It's just great to see that you've got a story in the picture about his opening at the Cornwall Library.
and a very awestruck kind of guy for somebody who really truly is a world-class artist and is well-known. And generously, he's like, and I think he's like many artists, he's just constantly drawing. So he has a lot of work and is very generous with it. And there's a big sale of it at the Cornwall Library. It's a fundraiser for them. And Lila did a really nice profile of him, but a beautiful photo. And we're hoping sometime this summer to maybe do a profile of him and his life, but there's so much that I'm not sure that we were able to extract all of it in our first interview, so we'll see how that goes. Really a treasure here.
It'll take up two or three pages. These guys he's had an amazing life. The Sharon Library, the American Legion Hall, once again, when the Sharon Town Hall was being renovated, became the Town Hall, and it will now become the library while the library undergoes their renovations.
Right, and the slightly sad undertone of this is the Legion is losing members.
Yeah.
There are not as many veterans who are participating and supporting the Legion. A lot of it is on the shoulder of the actors who have done for so many years their fundraising dinners. But as Gretchen Hochmeister, the head of the Hotchkiss Library of Sharon, said, it's a little quiet at the Legion right now, so they're happy to share the space with us. But as everybody goes through, you know, take a look at the Legion space. It's very interesting, you know, just like kind of a one-room place. So in a sense, the library is going to be almost like a mobile library. You're going to have a limited amount of books that you can check out there. But as Gretchen says, you also have the extraordinary Connecticut Interlibrary Loan Program. And if you have a library card in Sharon, you can go to any library in the state and use your card. But exciting, after much discussion, the Hotchkiss Library is moving forward quietly and efficiently into its renovation, expansion, and making itself more accessible to people with disabilities.
You know, the last time the Legion leased out to the town, they were able to add on to the Legion Hall and add a whole new kitchen. So it benefits everybody to have the Legion Hall be available for things like this. Housatonic, the Academic Bowl team, 13th in the U.S.,
and a nice photo that shows the diversity of young people who do Academic Bowl here. Very interesting group of seniors, four of them. And, I mean, 13th in the U.S., there are 50 states, so that, you know, like, that's pretty impressive. And the team led, of course, by Peter Vermillier, who has been honored as one of the great teachers. He is a history specialist, but is pretty broad and is a great coach.
All right, and a story by Patrick Sullivan on the bridge repair and perhaps a median in Salisbury.
Right, and so these, again, are things that have been talked about for a long time. I remember standing out with Nancy Johnson on the front steps of the post office in Lakeville and talking about that intersection of 41 and 44, which is busy and downhill, and a lot of trucks use it. And the idea of maybe doing a roundabout there, and of course many people hate roundabouts, so we'll see what happens with that. And then the Salmon Kill Bridge, I think that they mean the one that was actually fairly recently done.
Yes.
Over toward the Lime Rock side.
Yes.
And I guess there's the water, it seems very placid there, but I guess is working harder. It's scoring, scouring the base, and that needs to be repaired already.
Now, you've got a note about the traffic detour that's going to take place in North Caden while they do work on that railroad crossing beginning on Monday, the 21st.
Yes, please do look at that, because whether or not you live in Canaan, you're definitely going to be inconvenienced by that. It's a little bit slow over there right now. It's going to be great when it's done, but for Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, you might want to just avoid driving through North Canaan.
Yeah, it. you know, every time it takes a while to get these things done, but once they're done, they hold for about 10 or 15 years, but it's almost like a 15-year cycle where these railroad crossings have to be replaced. But and it can be a pain, but it makes for a safer area for everybody. We'll go to the a very good compass in just a moment, but let's go to your editorial on the opinion pages, turning the page to life's next chapter.
Right, and so what we're talking about, of course, is graduation. And on that note, I'll point out, everybody should take a look at the photographs of all the graduates from Housatonic Valley Regional High School, which run in the paper this week and have support from advertisers. Read through the ads as well as looking at those photos to see the support for our seniors and for the high school. So it's always fun to see these enthusiastic young people ready to move on in life. Boy, this class has had challenges like no other in so many ways, and so they really should take seriously the fact that they've overcome obstacles and move forward to be able to graduate. So we wish them the best as they move forward, and we talk about everything they've done in the past 4 years.
You know, I read this, and I thought back, it was 50 years ago this year that I graduated from Housatonic Valley Regional High School. And during graduation week, what was I preparing to do? I was preparing to take my first full-time job in radio, which I got right after graduation. So it's a, you know, it is a milestone in, I think, everybody's life, and no matter whether they go on to higher education or into the workforce or whatever, the high school graduation is almost, to me, more important than the college graduation, because that's really where you go from being a young student to being an adult. So.
An adult. It's a passage into adulthood, and it's true. It doesn't matter what comes next, but something comes next that defines the rest of your life. And certainly that was completely true for you, how fortunate you were to find something you loved at that moment as you were leaving high school. Amazing. And I'm sure part of that was what you learned at Housatonic that gave you the background to be able to do it.
Well, it was Morris Ranfeld. He just had he had a little radio station.
That's amazing, you know. That's 50 years ago they had that. It's
pretty amazing.
Great. Yeah.
Let's go to the letters. The first letter that you can talk about, manners are at a premium now. Once again, there's a lot of new people moving into the area, and there's some angst on both sides.
Yeah, and so this is opinion from Marietta Whittlesey in Lakeville and Gallatin, New York, two homes, but she talks about the rudeness she's been seeing in the local market, and I have to say, no matter where you go, you really can feel that angst, as you referred to it, that anxiety that people feel moving forward from a pandemic and yet still having it hanging over their heads and not sure what the next best step is. And, you know, the way people express their anxiety really varies. So it's incumbent on all of us to think of those around us and understand they're going through the same sort of difficulties we are.
And a couple of other letters, one from Catherine Payton and one from Tony Nania as well.
Right. Tony Nania is talking about the Canaan Fire District, and really, it's not a long letter, but it's pithy. Don't miss Tony's letter, because he really explains a problem that came up for the fire district in North Canaan and the solution that they were able to find along with Representative Maria Horn. So take a look at that letter, read it carefully, and think about ways that your legislators can help you through an issue. There really are answers out there, and they found it. Catherine Payton talking about making good choices and why it matters, and give that a read. Of course, we have Turning Back the Pages from Norma Bosworth as well. Always something interesting in there.
Yeah, well, what's interesting in there is it's got the story about William Murph Mayberry, who passed away an automobile accident 25 years ago today, and his name is still remembered. The Murphy Open, the Tri-State Chamber of Commerce annual golf tournament, goes on in his name and his memory as well.
It's true. You know, we don't always include obituaries in this column, but he was such a force in the area, and it's hard to believe it was 25 years ago, but we know that that's how long the Murphy Open's been around, too. So, he was an extraordinary guy. A lot of people knew him, so it's a good time to remember him.
All right, and the Viewpoint Pages, a premature look at the presidential race and the good news on climate change and stealing fire from the gods.
That's right. Stealing fire from the gods, Lonnie Carter, writing about, but, you know, only he can write about things in this way, interweaving mythology with history in a way that is fascinating. So don't miss that. And Dick Ollis taking a premature look at the 2024 presidential race, which he admits is really no sensible person would want to take a look at the presidential race yet, and yet we do, and he says, that's why I'm doing it, and let's talk about it. So he really, and of course, as always, Dick gives us background as well as looking at some people who may be in the race or should have been in the race who aren't always top of the mind of the cable news networks, let's say, or the general media.
All right. And I love the story. Once again, know about the history of our area, the look back at history of the plane crash in Lake Full Lake.
We have these extraordinary old photos that we've been collecting as we're trying to figure out what to do with our thousands of photo negatives, which need to find a home and or need to be scanned. And so Kathy Phillips and Perry Gardner have been scanning them for us and for the local historical societies, and it's just stunning, the stuff that you see in them. And we are fortunate to have 99% of what's in those photo bins is easily searchable on our archive at the Scoville Memorial Library. So I was looking through the old photos, found these incredible crash photos, tried to figure out what the heck that was, found the article for it, and it was an extensive article. James Clark, our composing person, who does everything, knows everything, figured out a way to take the text out of the old issue, and we copied it over. And we're going to try and do that a lot this summer, because we do feel like there's a lot of history here, and some of it's mythic, some of it's true. And as we have new people coming in, it's nice to sort of share and pass along some of that lore. But a fascinating story, and the hero of it is somebody named Jeanette Axleby, who I've never met, but who is just a woman, amateur scuba diver, who lived around here. Her intuition was what helped them find one of the bodies of the plane passengers, which is incredible and so important for the family. But also she and one other diver from town were able to dive much deeper than the Connecticut State Police divers, who were only authorized to go to 35 feet. And as we know, Lake Full Lake, the deepest natural lake in the state of Connecticut. So do look at that and keep an eye out for other vintage stories coming up this summer.
All right, we've got 2 minutes to go for Compass, and it starts off with ABBA.
ABBA, I love it. There's so many tribute shows. I assume that part of this is that it's just harder to book in-person shows where you have so many moving parts. These tribute shows, I think, are a little bit more, you know, it's a group, they take care of everything. But there's some great tribute shows coming up, and of course, my favorite, ABBA. On my birthday, July 10th, at Sharon Playhouse, we've got Books and Blooms coming up this weekend, a review of the new Malcolm Gladwell review by Rob Pacino, who loves all mechanical and transportation stories. And then some of the famous flea markets that are coming up, there's some really epic ones. But we also have this special monthly tabloid Compass, and which has, I would say, about more than a dozen articles on things that are coming up this summer. I have to say I'm very anxious about the Sharon Playhouse and the Movie House stories, because things are changing so quickly with those guys that it's possible things have changed since we put these stories into the paper and printed them out. But as you know, listen to the interviews on WHDD that Marshall and Jill do. But stories about Ellen Griesdick, who's got summer camps, who's got tours, all sorts of stuff going on there for the summer. We've got sports, outdoor sports at Orvis, where you can learn fly fishing and clay shooting, which are big draws for a lot of people. Patrick Sullivan explains the difference between fishing in Connecticut, which he likes, and fishing in New York State, which he loves. Again, Robert Buccino talking about railway history, of which there's quite a bit around here, and so many different ways to learn about it. The Wasaic Project, really fun, very outdoor, great pizza. Jacob's Pillow, Music Mountain for classical music, for chamber music, for jazz. And a lot of interesting, obscure stuff at Bard College, which is a very easy, very scenic 40 minutes away. And then one of my daughter's favorite programs here is Boondocks Film Society, which is doing Ghost World all the way up in West Stockbridge on June 23rd. But has done lots of shows at the Four Brothers Drive-In.
It's nice to get back to normal.
Yeah. We could do 20 pages of things that actually are going to happen.
Absolutely. Well, that's just a glimpse at this week in the Lakeville Journal, the stories you'll find online, tricordernews.com, home delivery, or at your newsstands. We'll speak to you guys next week.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
This week in the Lakeville Journal, once again, available Lakeville Journal, tricordernews.com, or on your newsstands as well.